The theme for the evening talk is making the effort. In the course of the days of the meditation retreat, we essentially put the retreat or the form of the retreat into three primary areas. One, of course, are the meditations themselves. The others are the meetings with teachers, small groups, one-to-ones. And that which takes place here in the hall, which could be the morning instructions, the inquiry or guided meditation, and the evening talk. And there's a kind of interaction that is taking place. From the silence to the listening, and from the listening back into the silence through the day. And part of the purpose for all of that, and a core purpose, is to contribute to insight. And so that helps in the process of the day for us to develop greater simultaneously greater inner awareness and simultaneously greater outer awareness. And from that awareness, hopefully, in the actual act of the listening itself, and through the day with the meditations, two important features are taking place. And that is, one, that it's a direct contribution to greater levels of calmness of being, and secondly, and equally important, is the insight. And though it's often referred to as insight meditation, but more precisely, it's in fact meditation for calmness and insight. One of the features of the calmness aspect, of course, is that it tends to be rather supported by the environment. Silence, stillness, use of language on specific occasions, as I just referred to. But how easily in life we can be in a supportive social situation, or we can be alone, and through the process, in this case of meditation or other exercises, we can find a certain calmness of being. But the calmness is very easily dependent on the presence and the support and, in fact, the behavior of others. And the insight aspect of it all is to contribute to upholding and sustaining the calmness, and also to establishing a depth of inner peace and clarity in our life, which is actually not so dependent on the environment, not so dependent on a social situation of others giving support to us. The analogy which is used, by the Buddha, he said, regard yourselves as a kind of castle, and the windows of the castle are your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, the sense doors or the windows. And two birds travel to the castle and come to the lord of the castle. And then he says, what is the lord of the castle? And he said, awareness. And then he said, what are the names of the two birds that come through the senses to the lord of the castle? And he says, one is calmness and the other is insight. And then he says, the Buddha says, What is the message that the two birds of calm and insight are bringing the lord of the castle? And then the Buddha replied, they bring the message of liberation. Very beautiful metaphor. So in working with the process of meditation and in listening to the teachings, from the standpoint of experience, it's intended to be a contribution for calmness of being and a contribution for insight, and both are mutually supportive and mutually necessary. With that, with the effort which is required, we speak a lot, of course, about making the effort here. And that effort which is put out gives one, and it can be helpful and important, to gives one a sense of doing something with a purpose for doing it. And you and I, of course, in our daily life circumstances, in our much of our life, we've been encouraged and told to make an effort. So quite often, we bring mindfulness or awareness to things, and at times we also have to make the effort. And sometimes that effort is showing itself in bringing back the attention to the present moment. It can be an effort to do that. It can be an effort to stay with the breath. It can be an effort to do walking meditation when one is tired. It can be an effort to work diligently through the whole of the day, etc. So we keep applying a sense of effort to what we do. Sometimes, though, we think, we imagine, or we believe, if I just practice mindfulness, if I just practice making an effort, then everything should come easier and clearer. And we can have too much trust and too much faith in just being mindful, in just observing, in just giving attention to. As though just by observing, that means the problem will go away. Just by being aware of something, that will change it and make it easier. Just by noticing things come and go, that's all that one needs to do. The mind often just doesn't cooperate. It would be lovely if we could just be mindful of what's going on and the mindfulness had enough power to it to dissolve the issue, the anger, the upset, the confusion, the indecision, the wanting, the clinging, or whatever. So sometimes in our day, we are making the effort to be aware, making the effort to be mindful, but we may need to remember that that is just a first step for inner change. It's not the first, middle, and last step, it's the first step. Sometimes the mindfulness does have enough power to it. You notice a lot of, you're really thinking about something very, very strongly. The ideas keep going on in the mind. And there is, though, enough power in the mindfulness. One sees these thoughts going on. One sees them very clearly, and they just disappear out of the consciousness. And one finds oneself quite clearly back with the present moment. So that, in other words, sometimes the mindfulness or observation, paying attention to, making the effort for that, is enough. But what happens when we're very much mindful of something going on with us, extremely aware of it, but it really isn't making any difference. Whatever is going on in the state of mind is still repeating itself. And that should be and needs to be a signal to us. Just observing needs other factors to be brought in as well. And then the whole attitude of mind and the intention of the mind comes in with that as a ways and means to working with it. So sometimes we may have to ask ourselves, in terms of making the effort, what is it that I need to develop here? Do you just think about in your own situation any circumstance that has arisen for you during today, which seems to have a kind of life of its own, which keeps repeating itself, and you've been very much aware of it, and it hasn't gone away? So you might ask yourself, well, what else do I need to bring to this? Sometimes one of the important things that we do need to bring to it, we need to make it very clear in ourselves, actually, am I really interested in working through this? Because the mind, as I say, sometimes we just say, think or imagine, just being aware of should be enough. Am I really interested in working with this? Sometimes we start a retreat. On the first day, as a number of you reported, it may have been extremely difficult. Tremendous amount of pain, mental, emotional, physical, etc. Feeling quite exhausted, tired, burnt out from it. Next day, timetable, pretty well the same. It serves as a backdrop. One has intended to stay with it. And the next day, same timetable, but feeling quite different about it. Energies may be loosening up, one may feel a bit lighter, a bit higher, a bit more in the flow. And one stays with it, same timetable again on the third day. And through the sustaining, one sees, things are changing yet again on the third day. All of that has come about as a contribution from the awareness, contribution through your making an effort, and the contribution to the willing to sustain something. The willing just to be present, just to sustain it through, so that one gets used and more familiar, as Catherine was speaking in the talk last night, things arising and passing, and one just gets familiar with the process of it. All the time, keeping essentially two features. What will contribute to calmness in this situation? What is contributing to insight? And sometimes we forget to take an interest in such a way that we say, sometimes almost with the words or with the sense inside, in this situation that one is experiencing, which say might be difficult at a certain time, what will contribute to calmness in this situation? What is it that I need to get some insight into? What is it that I need to understand? And therefore we're paying respect to those two birds that come to awareness of calm and insight. What there? If you look at situations in the small groups, or when you come to see the teachers, and the communication that takes place, much of the intention is in fact to find more clarity, more awareness, to have the resources, tools, methods, techniques, ways of looking, which would contribute to more calmness about a situation and more insight about it. So both through the teachings, through the groups, through the one-to-ones, through the silence and through your own practice, there's a very deep interest in keep finding where the calmness is, what contributes to calmness, and what contributes to insight. What contributes to inner peace, what contributes to understanding. So the process of all this, with making the effort, is in fact going on in different ways all the time. The making the effort, if you think in, think of ordinary circumstances of life as well as here, we'd often say to ourselves, right now I'm at this point in my life and I make the effort to get to somewhere else. And when we reach where we want to go to, we generally feel happier, we feel we've achieved something, we feel we've accomplished something, we've gone from A to B. And in order to go from A to B, in the body of the teachings, there are four considerations to help that effort. And once again, you and I need to be aware of the four considerations in order to allow that process of a direct effort to practice, or however we use it, to be present for us. And what are the four? One is to develop something. We develop a practice, we develop our meditations, we develop focusing, we develop the inner life so that we can move forward. But it's not only developing it in learning ways, methods and techniques, etc., but sustaining it. That developing and sustaining, and two other features, help to for that to take place. And one is the exploration of what it is to overcome, and in skillful ways, what it is to avoid. So if I'm making the effort to develop as a human being, I will remember, and I'll make time in my life to reflect on, what is it that I need to develop? How am I going to sustain that development? What is it that I need to overcome? And what is it that I need to avoid? And if you and I can just remember those four areas, that making of the effort to really live a wise life, an awakened life, a clear life, can really take place, because we really are attending to these four primary areas of life. Sometimes we look at our life and we might see we're putting all of these four efforts into areas which are just not worth making all that effort for. Sometimes it could be profiteering, putting all the effort to developing one's career, to make more and more money, sustaining it, avoiding anything really significant in life, whatever, and I'm not sure what the overcoming would be here, but so sometimes, the opposition. So sometimes the mind focus just goes in one particular area, It gets us in its grip, and we try to overcome everything else which stops us from going in that way, getting what we want there. But Dharma practice may use the language of developing and sustaining and overcoming and avoiding, and we look to our life to see, well, what does that mean for me in really practical sense? If one's got an addiction, one may have to put a tremendous amount of making the effort into overcoming the addiction. And through the overcoming of one, it helps to develop and sustain and cultivate the others. So it may be that when we bring awareness to our life, that and making the effort, it may have to include, what am I developing life? How am I going to sustain it? What do I need to overcome in life? What do I need to avoid in life? And bringing that in to the awareness so that we're not just thinking awareness will do it all for us, because it won't. Sometimes, in the listening itself, and what we notice too with giving of retreats here, some people, and it varies a lot from people who are new to people who've done a little retreat before or lots of retreats, what the response is to the listening. So some will say, possibly people who are new on retreat, all the instructions and the inquiries, all that's shared with us during the day is very, very helpful, very, very important, and all that's generating across just helps to give a context. But for another person or persons, maybe the first time or hear a lot, they'd be feeling that one is hearing a great deal, and it can feel hard to absorb. And how easily in that we can get the idea or the impression with it that we want everybody to accept or believe what we say, which we don't. In the actuality of the listening itself, and sometimes it takes some effort to listen there, the listening is for two purposes, calm and insight. Sometimes we're trying to build up in the listening a kind of Buddhist ideology or an idea about what Buddhism is. Those of us who've been involved for more than 30 years still have no idea what it is, and not particularly interested either. So sometimes they're trying to grasp it all and put it in a kind of framework of belief system. Like anything else in life, everything's defined by the mind. Nothing outside of the mind's view of things. So what that means in the listening itself, it isn't necessary to try to have a big picture as you listen. If it's contributing to some calmness of being, if it's contributing in the specifics as some insight, wonderful. And if it isn't, let it pass through. That's why we have space between our ears. Let it and some more than others, and let it pass through. And in that, if it just passes through, calmness will be present, because it's just passed through. We haven't held on to it, clung to it or whatever. We've kept to the principle of the two birds coming to the Lord of awareness for calm and insight. So sometimes it doesn't pass through, and it lands inwardly, but not in a way of providing insight and understanding. It lands in the cesspit of the active mind, and there's an upheaval that takes place, and a lot of agitation and restlessness and comparing and judging, etc., etc. That's the risk with listening. Instead of contributing to calm and insight, it contributes to chaos and confusion. Can we say, okay, that's what happens? Can I develop and sustain a practice to work through that to find in myself calm and insight? So in other words, with listening, we heard an inquiry, one example, there's listening going on, it makes an impact. The impact doesn't contribute to calm and insight, it contributes to chaos and confusion. It happens in listening to the talks, just as well as making phone calls to parents. And in the actuality of the listening, it may land and create a disturbance, an agitation, a disagreement, a rebellion, a protest, or whatever. When we get really upset, I'm not saying this has happened to anybody here, I could have done, they haven't told me, but when we get upset with what we listen to, or any other sounds that we don't like, what have we done? We have given authority to another person over our inner life. That's what we've done. We've handed them our mind on a plate and said to them, make me angry. Make me confused. Make me upset. Make me distressed. We've handed it over to them. We've given the word or the actions of the other authority over our life. It's a pity, because we've handed it over to another's mind. So listening with awareness as a practice as a practice is learning that skill to stay centered, to stay calm, and no matter what comes over to us, with making that skillful right effort, anything which we hear can become a resource for insight. No matter what it is, it can provide insight. And therefore we're paying real respect to the Dharma teachings, and more important, in fact, respect to our own life. This making of the effort, sometimes people get the idea that this Buddhist practice is only about effort, and then one hears from the tradition, Buddhist tradition especially, these various heroic stories, and they come in the Zen tradition and the Theravada tradition and the Tibetan Mahayana tradition, etc., of what efforts that people made to get enlightened. And to some degree it didn't help with Siddhartha Gautama spending 6 years doing the most silly little exercises, putting himself through utter misery. And then people then get the idea from that 6 year period, plus reading all these heroic stories over the centuries, that, well, anything I do is, whoever the I is, seems pathetic compared with what they did in the past, quite forgetting, as with the Buddha himself, not only did he criticize those 6 years of severe austerities, he absolutely rejected it. Absolutely rejected it as a way of liberation. The first thing he pointed out was it was a complete and utter waste of time. So our making the effort in the way that we do is a genuinely authentic way to find what a truly enlightened life is. But, as I say, sometimes one gets the idea it's effort, 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 all the way. And there are plenty of teachers, unfortunately, who put this out. And when one of the teachers said, well, if you look in middle-length sayings, which is almost the Bible of the Vipassana community, for many of us, insight meditation community, it has within it 154 discourses of the Buddha. And let me say, know them, reading them well, over 20, 30 years now, very familiar with them. And so one of the teachers said, it's full of right effort. And I thought, you obviously, sir, have not read this book for a long time. You've got an image. And at the very back of the book, there's an excellent index. And one just looks up the word effort, or my effort, I think it appears in 1400 pages 4 or 5 or 6 times. It's not in every discourse, not everywhere. And therefore its use and its application is specific, in which, as I said, at times, what in my life would be worth making the effort for? How can I develop and sustain it? What in my life, at times, is worth overcoming and avoiding so that I don't get caught up in suffering? Sometimes, in that movement of making an effort, some of you, include here, some of you have done lots of practices, as well as a new one, a genuine question can start arising inside of oneself. Do I really need to keep putting out the effort? Because in any effort that we put out, we have a gap. I am like this, and I put out an effort in order to come to this. And it's appropriate and skillful, and you've been putting out the effort day one, day two, day three, and some will be feeling the benefit of being more present, more here and now, willingness to work with things, willingness to look at and overcome things. And all of that is indicating that one's taking steps and, shall we say, going from A to B. Sometimes, though, some thoughts will arise. I'm constantly making the effort, but is there any end to this effort? Is Dhamma practice constantly making an effort to the rest of my life until the nature's taken out of me the last breath of my body, and then I can't make any effort anymore, and then somebody else has got to make the effort to carry the corpse to the crematorium? Is that how it is, one might think there? Sometimes, instead of going towards, this is important here, instead of going towards and making the effort to go towards, we maybe temporarily give up the idea. Going towards what? And if we are going towards something, in some way or other, we are saying to ourselves, there's something unsatisfactory about the present. Who I am, what's going on now. And if I go towards, it will be more satisfactory when I arrive. And therefore there is a gap which we can keep trying to bridge. We not only do it in our meditation, we do it in our work, we do it in sports, we do it in things that we do, etc. No, it's not right now, it's not quite right, it could be better than this, therefore if I put in the effort, if I do something, it will get better. And then, and maybe it does. One feels the improvement and the development which is taking place, but that improvement and development doesn't last. And we get the benefit of what we did, we get the fruits of what we did through our effort, through our trying, through putting the energy in, and there's some satisfaction, some pleasure, some contentment, etc. Then it begins to fade, whatever it is about in life, and then we find we have to then start the effort up again and then go on again. Each time it's kind of telling us there's something not quite complete and fulfilled about the present. Therefore we move on somewhere else. Catherine spoke about this in the instructions I think this morning. So sometimes the thought arises, well, is it just a matter of keep making the effort? In the Dzogchen tradition, which is a Tibetan tradition, and it's very, it's kind of a sister practice to insight meditation practice. And in the Dzogchen tradition, one of the emphases, and a very helpful and very important emphasis, is much more about a calm abiding and an awareness of the significance of it, which I'll try and touch on in a moment or two. So say sometimes we seem to be reaching out and we seem to be extending ourselves and moving forward and developing and cultivating our practice, and then some thoughts may arise, do I really need to keep doing that? And it's worthwhile listening to those thoughts, not having to keep developing, and therefore for there to be a really genuine receptivity to what is. To what is. As though we couldn't get out of this situation. As though nothing at all could change. Normally we're doing our meditations and we say, well, this is difficult, and then if I put my practice in, I work with it, I overcome the difficulty, it changes, and I move to something else. And I cultivate something else, happiness, joy, contentment, and that deepens, and in that deepening I've moved to something else. And there's a way of being, and the Dzogchen tradition is a very wonderful reminder of this, of just the sense of being as though nothing is going to change. There's just how it is right now, there's just an abiding with what is. Therefore, there's nowhere to go. This is it. We might say initially, this is it due to the circumstances of our senses. At the most superficial level, one could say that whatever happens in life, what is it going to be so different? Because whatever happens in life, I'm just going to be seeing, I'm just going to be hearing, I'm just going to be smelling, I'm just going to be tasting, I'm just going to be touching. I've only got these five senses to help me to know the world, whether I'm here, somewhere else, it's just five senses, So how could it be different? Could it be so different? A little, tiny little variation in colours, little variations in sounds, little variations in temperatures. Or we could say, well, it can't be really different because I'll still feel like I. There'll still be some consciousness. Sometimes I'll be aware, sometimes I won't be so aware. I'll have some feelings, I'll have some thoughts, I'll have some states of mind, have some intentions. It's all much the same. So just at the outer level, sometimes we just contemplate at the ordinary human level and say, can things ever be really different? Anywhere. Really different. And one looks around and says, well, as far as one can see, other people just seem to see, hear, smell, taste and touch, and have an inner life that reflects it all, etc. Won't be so different. But teaching, take it a step, we might say, deeper than that. What would it be, as I said, that there is nowhere left to go? That nothing will ever be any, will ever be really different. What's the feeling that it brings? What's the feeling that it brings? And some may look at that feeling inside and say, God, I'd hate that. It'd be incredibly boring. Things didn't change. Another person may say, but if nothing really changes, maybe I've got to, may need to look a little bit more carefully and with a greater interest at what's, as it were, right before me. What is it that's immediately revealed? And if I try to make an effort, I'm caught in a bit of a loop. If I make an effort, I put a pressure on myself. I'm saying, this isn't good enough. I've got to make an effort to get to something else. Trees don't ask, where is the wood? Fish don't ask, where is the water? Human beings do, though. Human beings. We seem to have immense difficulty in realizing what's immediate. Somehow or other, we've got caught up in details, or we've got caught up in pictures, or we've got caught up in so-called past or present or future. And somehow it's not letting us really know what we're in. And therefore our life keeps going up and down, backwards and forwards, this way and that way, sometimes calm, sometimes confused, etc. Because we haven't realized what is. And therefore we end up like fish looking for water and trees asking, where's the wood? That's what we've got ourselves into. And if we know, we're at peace. We've realized what it is. And we realize that the words that we use, what can the word ocean say about the ocean? Couldn't tell us anything about it. So we come to a kind of wordlessness, a genuine speechlessness. And the notion of effort doesn't seem to have a relevance. hold of that. We look to our finally to our experience with all of this, and to be with the truth of things, the truth which never dissolves and never fades and never changes and never comes and never goes. It's just the way that it is. To be with the truth of things, we also, from a human standpoint, have to be as honest as we can. Truth and honesty going together. And what that might mean for some at the present time, in being honest with ourselves, we may say, yes, at the present time, I do need to bring greater awareness to things. I do need to recognize the importance of effort. I do need to actually work to develop and sustain, overcome and avoid, to make enough clarity and clearance in myself for an abiding which is truly receptive. And others will say at this present point, I've looked at myself, I've engaged so much in making the effort in my dharma, in my practice, etc. I've used enough methods of made those efforts. Those efforts belong to the past. They've been extremely helpful, very, very useful. But what about giving up all hope? What about giving up all possibility that I can achieve something? I was quoting one of the groups today, or the person, I can't remember. Rather lovely comment of the German mystic Meister Eckhart, much loved in the Buddhist tradition, when he said, when I have love, with my love, when I have love, with this love, I must go to God. Spiritual person, religious person, when there is love. So sometimes in making the effort, in opening the heart, in developing heart, one, with this love, one must go to God. God can be in the religious sense, or God, the best in human beings. One wishes to share, to give to others, to spread it out infinitely. And then he says, when I abide in non-attachment, God must come to me. So sometimes we look at our practice and we say, my practice is developing, sustaining, and I'm going somewhere, and it's leading somewhere, and it's towards something wordless, speechless, beyond the known. And one brings one's love towards all of that there. And sometimes, and this is where we must be true to ourselves, there is just an abiding, just an awareness. We've got nowhere to go. There's no point in trying to make an effort for the self to get to something. And all that can be is just a receptivity and a kind of innocence and a genuine sense and feeling of one's inability as a human being to make real sense of this existence. To actually try to comprehend it. And sometimes, in that receptivity, and one can't fathom it out, because the mind, which is finite, cannot fathom out, work out what is infinite. It cannot do it any more than the word ocean can work out what the ocean is. And therefore, at times we are left with a genuine incomprehensibleness about things. Because it is all utterly incomprehensible. could we rest with it? Rest with it so well and so insightfully that it truly communicating the way things are. Utterly incomprehensible. And nothing can measure that. There's something freeing, and the inner response in the heart is a sense of wonder and awe. And it's just there. And that sense of wonder and awe about the undying, the deathless, incomprehensible nature of things, that's what comes out of the heart. It's not an intellectual incomprehension, not a scientific one, any of that. It actually transforms the inner life.